welcome to the King Hero IndyCar Podcast with Kirby and Justin.
You have your push-to-pass operating there when you were doing the intro?
It's got to press it a little prematurely, Kirby.
You can't use that till after the intro is over.
How are you?
Well, how are you?
All right. Kirby, big news day. Big news day in the world of IndyCar. Just timestamp this. It's April 24th, a Wednesday. Leap. Day after my mother's birthday, so happy birthday to her.
Happy birthday, Joan. Well deserved.
Thank you.
I felt a little impertinent there, not being so casual.
But. I understand. I appreciate that. So let's just dive in, all things IndyCar, Kirby.
Dive away.
Does Lance Stroll ever admit he's done something wrong?
I have no idea. Can't help you there.
Is the classic, sometimes I think he's like, all right. And then other times he's just the ultimate, you know, petulant, spoiled child. It's unbelievable. Unfortunately in China, it was more of the latter. Kirby, did you watch any China F1 by chance?
I did not. Okay. It's a busy weekend.
Well, it was, and we'll get into some of that. But can I just give you a few sentence summary so you don't feel completely left out?
Verstappen
won by.
Okay, I got it. There we go.
A large margin. Yes.
Okay.
It was in China. Yeah. I thought the stupidity of the F1 fan was well on display there in China.
Say it ain't so.
In the sense that Zhou Guanyu, the only Chinese driver, who you know obviously would have a lot of local fan support, right? We can accept that, right? But the fans are like jumping up and down and screaming on top of their head when they pass Logan Sargeant. And then, you know, a few laps later, he passes Logan Sargeant again, which means he got passed back by Logan Sargeant, and they're going crazy again. Like, you know, it was a pass for the lead. I just found that bizarre.
Well, according to one of those top-level Formula One, major domos, all you need to take over a country and get their attention is to have a driver from that country. So, you know, America doesn't need Michael Andretti and his team. They just need an American driver. Just look at what Verstappen has done for Holland.
He's just picking off where Rinus VK left off.
Exactly. It was just a dumb comment that I've stuck with me for a long time.
Yeah. One of those passes Zhou Guanyu made, he actually clipped his wing off as he was passing him. In other words, it wasn't even a clean pass. And they were going crazy. Perez came in third, which given the dominating performance of Verstappen, doesn't bode well for him keeping that ride, in my opinion. Magnussen seems to be also struggling. I suspect he will be gone next year. And Logan Sargeant will have to be gone next year, I have to believe. So there's going to be a lot of empty spaces there in F1. That is a space to watch and some good rides available. So
does that mean we can't count on seeing Theo or share in an IndyCar next year?
Well, I think since with his McLaren affiliation, I would say, and from what I've kind of read of where he's at, he's not a top candidate to go back into F1, I don't believe.
Really? Formula 2 champion?
Yeah, but I think he had a really bad start in his Super Formula in Japan. And I'm not so sure he's on anybody's top list. I think there's other guys, other young bucks that are kind of ahead of him in the line, so to speak. So he's a possibility for IndyCar. I'm just wondering if any of these other guys, Magnussen, Sargeant, might find themselves talking to people here.
Like Prema, for example?
Yeah. Like I said, the Formula One thing, Alonso stated he's going to stay with Aston Martin, so that starts the dominoes setting. Okay, Kerb, moving on. Did you find the vintage cars to maybe be more interesting than the Long Beach race?
I didn't see them. I'm sorry. I don't know what you're talking about.
Good God. I mean, I know you're otherwise occupied through the weekend, but yeah. So we'll give you a pass. It was your daughter's wedding, but they had Bordet's Lola, McDonald's Lola. They had one of the McLarens. I think Johnny Rutherford's McLaren.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they had a Coyote out there. They had a Panos DP07 out there.
That'd be fun to see.
Yeah, no. So that's the reason I asked the question. Of course, you murdered it with your answer, but
I'm not quite as on top of things as I usually am. I'm sorry.
No, and like I said, we're going to give you a pass this time. But yes, the vintage cars on display were actually very, very cool. I mean, it was a great selection of cars, and I encourage you to go back and read an article on it or whatever, because the cars that they had were, I wanted to be there to see them.
I'll try to do that. That sounds
particularly that Panos. You know, I would like to have seen that in action again.
You know, from time to time, you'll read where people were the last drivers, what their favorite car was, and the car drivers that drove that car usually picked that car first, I think.
Yeah, first or second. A lot of times you hear, what, 96 Lola? Or was it a 96 Renard? I forget which.
But something from the mid to late 90s with all the
power. Yeah, either that one of those Renards or one of those Lolas, you get some really positive comments on as well.
Yeah.
Kerb, I couldn't also help but feel, this is going back a couple weekends now, on that weekend of April 14th, where there was only a e-race on in the NASCAR race in Texas. Just what a horrible weekend not to be racing. They really got to fix that in the schedule.
The front end of their schedule needs to be fixed. They got too many races on the back end of a series of a schedule that they choose to end prematurely. And but yet they have been unable for a number of years now to iron out the beginning of the schedule.
You know, you're just starved for information on open wheel racing because there's nothing going on that weekend. It's like, oh, God, why are they not there? But they weren't.
Yeah. I mean,
Kerb, is a true test of a veteran if he can flick the car around in a run out zone without stalling it?
I think you know you've arrived if you could do that. Yeah. Who was it that had to do the 3-point backup turn?
Several rookies and relatively newcomers were all doing the 3-pointer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I saw one or two that I only saw one that actually did the 180 without really even stopping to think about it. Saw one or two others that were able to do the 180 after they stopped and concentrate on what they were doing. And then the rest of them, it was back up, forward, back up, forward, back up, forward, to finally get turned around.
So, yeah, some of them made the mistake of trying the flick, but then kind of chickening out mid-flick and stalling the car, you know, instead of really just gassing it all the way around. But you see a guy like Dixon or a guy like Power, and there's no issue there, right? They just boom, around, gone.
Obviously, they got the experience and skill. And secondly, they have the confidence in their position with their teams not to be too worried about it. Whereas if you're a young guy and you, you're concerned about your position in the series or with your team, you might not be quite so cavalier about knocking off a wing or something.
No, look. Like I said, I think it's kind of one of the tests as if you're a veteran or not, or, you know, if you're worthy. I mean, it really does kind of seem to be kind of a litmus, your ability to do that and go. I think it says something about you. I really do. Random things from Long Beach. I can't help but feel Fro Rosenquist has been very impressive this year. A pole, a second in St. Pete, as far as qualifying goes, I think first qualifying in thermal. So, I mean, he's got the one lap thing right down.
Well, I think that's always been the case for Fro. As he said in an article a week or two ago, he needs to get the racing part figured out and not go backwards every week when he has such great starting positions. He one of the most prolific drivers in crashing or damaging his car during the races over the last three or four years. And he admits on his own in that article that he needs to figure that part out of it and execute on the potential that seems to be there after qualifying.
Well, I think in his defense, he had braking problems in Long Beach, by all accounts.
Of course he did, yes.
Oh, I mean, you're not believing that.
Well, he was on the record before the race even started that if Power went for the lead, he wasn't going to fight him for it. I mean, I don't know what kind of mentality that is going into the race. Maybe he knew what the tire choices were and he felt like he could come back for it or something. But even if you want to not fight for it, you don't tell the world you're not going to fight for it, do you?
Well, one man's opinion, I suppose. But I'm going to remain impressed by him. Kurt Townsend Bell. I have now come to the conclusion that Townsend Bell is the ultimate audience killer.
Because he hates dead air.
He is right out of the gate with comments like, as you've pointed out before, fuel saving. I think he gets more excited by fuel saving than actual racing. He loves the fuel saving, and he has to mention it almost every lap. And I think to the casual watcher, they're like, why do I want to watch a fast car go around saving fuel?
Well, as a general rule, I agree. In this case, it was an in-race action that caused or created the fuel saving opportunity. It didn't, at least for a change, the whole field wasn't fuel saving from the green flag, right?
No, and I'm not really referring to, I mean, you're right. It was just, I like the strategic aspect of the way the race panned out. And I don't have any problem with what Dixon did. It's, you know, we've talked about that, but I'm talking about in every practice session and every qualifying session, you know, it was just pervasive.
Sure. Sure.
And the other thing he kept saying many, many times in the lead up to the race is because of the tire compounds and the tightness of the confines that he didn't expect much passing or being impossible to pass.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's not really what you want to hear.
He did a lot of that as well. And I'm like, when is NBC going to put a muzzle on this guy?
Right.
Like, Townsend, shut up. Whether you feel that way or not, just shut up.
I agree, and I wonder sometimes when they make big points about there not being any passing opportunities. Again, I wasn't paying that close of attention this weekend, but it's not unusual to hear that at any race. And you hear it up front before the race starts, and you're like, I mean, it may be honest, but it's not, as you say, not conducive to building a fan base or getting people to want to tune in.
And I don't need a hype guy. I don't want people like at Thermal where they're kind of trying to make a big deal out of what clearly wasn't, right? I don't necessarily want a hype guy, but I don't think it's relevant to speculate that there's going to be no passing. Why don't you wait and see what the race happens? And then if there isn't any, you can explain why. One person who's not particularly happy about the mid-season introduction of the hybrid curve, speaking of it, is I'm going to stop just short of calling him our savior, the Messiah, Zach Brown.
I wouldn't put that much on his head. I think a lot of people agree with him, but I think that I'm assuming that there are constituencies that wanted it. Also the point of demanding it, and I don't think putting it off any longer than necessary was an option for him.
Zach Brown had a lot to say, let's face it. He had a lot to say that we have said repeatedly on this podcast. It's almost like he took our roadmap for Indy and podcast that we did late last year and just spewed it out for them. In his suggestions in that presser he did. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I agree. It's a lot of stuff we've talked about.
I think he listened to our podcast and said, you know what? Those guys, that's right.
Well, he'll never admit it. Let's put it that way.
I think he took some notes. I mean, let's go over it. Do you got a second to go over what he said? first thing he said is, what's this obsession with having, you know, 30 cars? Wouldn't we be better off with 22 good ones?
Well, I mean, you know, if you look back, IndyCar coming out of the split and the Great Recession and all that was seen to be on shaky ground, and an indicator that was, you know, a low car count. So I think people associate strength of the series with an increasing car count, and that makes everybody feel better about, you know, the series and its future. Obviously, they're getting to the point now where they can't take any more and may have to consider cutting back. I think I don't agree with his comments there where he says, well, all these cars do is create red flags here or yellow flags there. I mean, quite honestly, sometimes that's what spices up the races. And I think having more rather than less cars, you know, helps to juggle things up during the races and cause issues, and they create teams to react and keep it from just being a straightforward speed race from the start. But obviously, they're going to have to work out something with the numbers. But I would not be in favor of 20 cars or something like that, like Formula One has. I'd like to see it in the 24 to 25 range anyway.
Okay, but you see the point, and the point is, less cars, more value for the team owners, because, and you know, harder to get in the series, more value for team owners. Let's face it, less sponsors spread, or, you know, same amount of sponsors spread over less cars, also probably a positive.
Sometimes, yeah. By the way, did you notice that the, as an aside, I'm sorry to get off the Zach Brown topic, but I think VK's car had no sponsors on the side.
It had no sponsors.
Which was a change, a concerning change. Maybe it's because they were on USA Network. Instead of a million fans, they got 300,000. But
was that what the rating was?
Yeah. Yeah. In round numbers. But yeah.
And how is that being spun in the world of – is that a horrible rating?
I haven't seen that anywhere. But I guess it was more a matter of, if Long Beach is your second biggest race, your second biggest event, why is it not on NBC, and then why is it on USA instead?
Yeah.
Which is a good question. But if you are building something that more people want to get involved in, obviously, again, it concentrates that money and that interest in a fixed number of cars. I don't understand the idea that you would have some number of charters and there would be 2 to 4 additional cars racing that would try to qualify and not be guaranteed to make the 27 car field or something. I agree.
I don't see
where that makes very much sense.
It seems very wonky to me. Where this has got to go and lead to, in my humble opinion, is some of these teams are going to have to cut drivers, or they're going to have to hightail it out of there and sell to somebody who does a better job. And to me, I know this is heresy to you, Kurt, but a team like Foyt should be selling themselves to somebody. Perennial backmarkers at this point. There's no excuses for them. The only time they ever did well was in the IRL. It's time to go.
You're talking about a podium finisher from the 107th running of the Indianapolis 500.
I am. That's exactly what I'm doing.
They deserve a charter for their years of participation, but... yeah, they might want to consider selling their charter.
Yeah, exactly. Sell that to Prima.
Right.
And everybody's happy.
Right.
Some of the other things Zach Brown said that I thought were pretty interesting. You know, we've talked about this before, the vast discrepancy in the broadcasting between Formula One and IndyCar race, and how they do a much better job in Formula One. He talked about the need for a new car, which was very refreshing coming from a car owner.
Yeah.
And he talked about the aforementioned stupidity of trying to introduce the hybrid mid-season. Didn't like that. Not a fan of that. He talked about the need for an East Coast race.
Well, what he talked about was the need for the series to invest in some events that maybe don't just come handed to them on a silver platter by a promoter, even if it costs them some money, in order to plant their flag and help to build their awareness in the marketplace.
Correct. He's basically said they got to put some money in to get those events started, which you have been on the soapbox on for some time. Speaking of soapboxes, he talked about the poor quality of the vast majority of the podiums, another thing that you have been on about for some time.
Right.
The one thing we haven't mentioned, which I thought was interesting, he mentioned the fact that an all-electric Formula E series is now worth substantially more money than an IndyCar series, despite its, you know, relatively recent history. And I thought that was interesting.
What I didn't understand about that was he says Formula E is trading at twice that. And is Formula E publicly traded, or I thought it was a private?
No, but I think what he's saying is that's, you know, the value of the relative value of the series.
Yeah, I just didn't know where he was measuring that, where he was getting that measure. I mean, it's...
Well, come on, Kirby's a veteran of the business. I mean, he should have a fair idea what it's worth.
Okay. The statement is Formula E is trading at twice that. So I didn't know if there were... I thought it was that Agag or Agog or whatever his name is. I thought he owned it and pretty much financially supported it. So I didn't know where valuation was figured, and for a number of years I thought he was keeping it afloat himself.
You're a very literal guy sometimes, Kerb.
Anybody
ever mention that to you? Very literal guy sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the point, getting out of the semantic argument that you want to have, is that he believes that series is worth quite a bit more than the IndyCar series, and it's only been around 10 years. Right. And I would say Zach Brown's in a position to pontificate on that, and he's probably right. And again, to me, it's hold your head and shame IndyCar, because I think that's something that is really kind of one of the tragedies of the last several years, is that they've allowed this to happen by almost every other series. It's terrible.
It is. I don't disagree. The disappointment is compounded by the assumption when Penske purchased the series that would change. And so far, people aren't feeling it or seeing it.
No, they're not. I do find it encouraging that Miles is reaching out to Zach Brown for a marketing committee that at least seems to be some kind of tacit admission that maybe they're not perfect on the marketing front. But it's too early to say much more than that.
Well, the cynic would say it's you're reaching out to your critics and co-opting them and getting them involved and trying to get them off your back. But it can't hurt, I don't think. Certainly getting impact from input from Brown. Jim Meyer from Meyer Shank is a part of that subcommittee, I guess. And I forget there was somebody else, a third team principal or somebody that was involved in that as well.
Forgive me if I'm not jumping up and down with joy, because I think it's too early days and we've seen far too many of these initiatives kind of go nowhere. I'm going to withhold my celebration, but I will commend IndyCar for taking a step in the correct direction.
Right.
Kerb, we did hear a lot about Teo Pichero, didn't we?
We did, yes. And I sat in on his press conference today, as a matter of fact. Very, very popular with the press and a very engaging young man.
And do you feel, as it's now starting to smell like poor little Dave is screwed?
It's a feeling that way, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's possible it's some members of the press getting carried away with their own speculations, but it sounds like this hand injury is a lot worse than expected. They're not even sure he can run the 500, and at that point, you know,
Gavin Ward himself is, you know, hedging his bets big time.
Yeah. If Malukas can't be back for the 500, then they don't need him for the season, right? That's pretty much all she wrote. I don't know what Porcher's future is with the super formula ride he has and that kind of, and Sauber as a reserve driver. But you can't help but think that they might be freeing him up from those commitments, and I'm sure he wouldn't run the 500, but I bet they try to get into some of the small ovals later in the season if they think he's the future.
Yeah, I agree. You could see him and Ilott both get McLaren seats next year, in my opinion. That's a possibility.
Yeah, I think if Porcher has similar results to what he had at Long Beach, he probably looks like a better shot than Malukas. And Ilott has shown a lot over the last couple of years, and he probably looks like a more cost-effective replacement for Rossi. So they may not care about cost-effective, but you know, if Rossi goes through two seasons without winning a race and being a back end of the top 10, then I don't think that's what they were signing up for when they hired him.
No. And we talked about at the beginning of the season, he really needs to show himself this year. And I'm not saying he's done poorly this year, but I don't think he has, but he's not dazzling yet either. Of course, you know, Pato kind of took him out Long Beach.
Yeah. We've talked about this before. They don't wait till the end of the season to start having these conversations. They're going to start having them in May.
And let's face it, he's not qualifying top six. That's the first, you know, one against you.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so, you're right. I just think, especially with so few races early in the season before the 500, it really gives you very little time to lay yourself out there. Curb, before we get into the elephant in the room, which I've purposely not talked about up to this point.
Right.
Did you notice that there's an autonomous car race going on at Yas Marina in better Dallara's than IndyCars are?
I think I saw some social media post or something, but that's as much as I know.
Yeah, well.
And if you asked me where it was, I couldn't have told you. So
Yas Marina.
But it did cross my mind that it's a harbinger of doom for motorsports as we know it. So
yeah, they're insisting that it isn't, but I'm kind of insisting that it is. So
yeah,
I don't think there's any way around where you end up with that. Is like, well, geez, wouldn't it be much safer to not have somebody in the car at all?
Exactly. Yeah. Just like in the movies.
Yeah. 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 So we don't like to see that, and I'm certainly not going to support that in any way. But I did note that the Dallara's were newer and better looking than IndyCars.
Well, that's not surprising.
Not surprising at all. All right, Curb, here we go.
Theo Porcher did say that one of the physical challenges in the Long Beach race was how warm it was in the cockpit because there's no airflow. Even with the new aero screens and the extra venting they provided, apparently didn't impress him coming from cars with the
fully ventilated.
Yeah, with the whatever you call those halos.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt. Go back to the elephant in the room.
Elephant in the room. All right, news today. Just for the sake of the people who don't follow IndyCar that closely. News today is that the winner of the St. Pete Grand Prix, the first race of the season, is no longer the winner of the St. Pete Grand Prix because he was able to press a push-to-pass button when nobody else in the field could. In fact, everybody on his team was able to do that, and two on the team elected to do that, namely Joseph Newgarden and Scotty M.
Who was third, so that's two-thirds of the podium.
Who was third. So kind of big news. They were stripped of their placing there. Will Power got a 10-point penalty, which I didn't quite understand because he didn't use it.
But he still had the system there to use if he...
I guess, but to me that's more of a team issue than a Will Power issue. I don't know why he was personally penalized, but it's early days.
Well, it's, I mean, whether it's software or hardware, he had illegal parts on his car, I guess, right?
Yeah. But it's early days. I don't think we've seen the last of this story. And what I've been able to gather up until this point, it looks pretty clear that Penske was engaging in what I often say is an adage in racing, he who cheats best wins. It is not, at least in the first, as best as I can tell, looking like an innocent mistake. And the broader questions are, who knew, how much? I mean, clearly the drivers must have known. They're not that known. I mean, any engineer looking at the data would have known. A lot of people had to know. And so when I think about the Shank tire pressure controversy at Daytona, it seems to me that there's some parallels here and potentially some parallels in getting some manufacturers kind of ticked off. What say you?
Well, start with the manufacturers. I think Penske or Chevrolet released a measured but still disapproving statement and supported the actions taken by IndyCar. So there's that. I think that, you know, I think in our discussions, I was hard on Shank, pretty much saying there's no way he didn't know. I don't know how he could not have known what was going on last year when they manipulated their tire pressure information. I got to say the same thing about Cindric. I can't believe as on top of it as those guys are. Once the push to pass was used, I can't believe they didn't know it was being used. Let's put it that way. Let's just say it was an honest oversight that they didn't take it out after testing the whatever this system is, a different version of this system. But I can't
believe
that's
already been debunked. But yes,
has it? I don't know.
Yes, it has. It has.
I mean, the IndyCar statement keeps using the word manipulated. So that seems to contradict, you know, an honest mistake in terms of forgetting to take it out. You know, once Newgarden and McLaughlin, for some reason they pushed the button, right? So, I mean, they had to know the capability was there for them. I can't believe the engineers on the stands for Penske didn't notice when that stuff was being used. Don't know why Power didn't use it, unless it just was dumb luck that he didn't.
To me, that's one of the more intriguing questions coming out of this. Now, they may go back and review a bunch of races and realize that, A, this has been going on for a while and that Power was in there as well. But
yeah. Well, they're already looking at video from qualifying from a year or two, I guess. Mm-hmm. I guess where people question them using buttons on their steering wheels. But you know, and I'm sure you've seen Joey Logano was caught using illegal hand gloves at Daytona.
Yeah.
So that's, and I guess my overall question is, if I understand correctly, Tim Cindric is in charge of the total Penske racing operation. He may not be in the pits at the NASCAR races on a week to week basis, but he's oversees that. He oversees the sports cars. He oversees it all, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you guys are questioning his role in all this. And
well, okay. Yeah.
I mean, the buck stops somewhere, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think you and I have been around the corporate block enough times to realize that it doesn't always stop with the guy it should.
No, I understand. But, I mean, supposedly Penske was very upset and very embarrassed at Daytona, and in his quotes, he told Logano so. Now, he seemed to focus it on Logano. Again, he's very embarrassed and upset this time, and assuming that Roger Penske wasn't involved, at some point he gets tired of being embarrassed and upset, doesn't he?
Okay. Here's what I'm going to go, you're tired of hearing this from me, but it just keeps proving itself true year after year after year. Again, going back to it, Gary Rush, 11-time sprint car champion of Australia, told me, the guy who cheats best is the winner. Okay? If you accept that racing is just filled with cheaters, that it's endemic in the system, and I know, Kerb, you're not that kind of guy. You don't want to believe these things, right?
Right.
You still believe that there's actually a difference between Republican and Democrats, but you're that kind of guy. Okay.
Right.
But the reality is, I think that that's exactly true. So like everybody's just trying to cheat and not get caught. And if you read if you talk about Penske specifically, if you go and read, you know, Donahue's book, it's, you know, half the book's about him cheating. Right? And who is he driving for? Roger Penske.
Right. Okay.
So I don't think Roger Penske's probably embarrassed for sure. But is he going to stop cheating? I doubt it. Is it kind of rife and kind of a wink, wink, nod, nod in any racing team that if you find something like that, hey, let's keep it to ourselves and utilize it? I think absolutely. And I think it can go too far. I mean, clearly, Shank killed his relationship with Honda over the thing. Right. And this, you know, we'll see where this goes. But I think you could piss off two manufacturers here. You could piss off Chevy for making them look complicit because they should have seen it in the data or whatever, right?
Right.
And you could piss off – you could just – I think Honda's leaving anyways, but they might just use this as an excuse to get out early. It's like, oh, you haven't been, you know, playing us – you've been running us dirty now for a couple of years, if it turns out that way. I mean, I could – this could turn into a real disaster, and I'm not predicting that. I don't think it will. But you got to start looking at these things this way, and we know how Honda feels about cheating. You know, we saw that with the Shank deal.
I agree. I think there's a fine line where searching for every advantage you can within the rule book becomes cheating. And so I don't know if everybody's cheating or if they're just trying to find every advantage they can within the rule book. But
well, AJ Foyt put a bolt through his pop off valve.
I know. Michael Andretti or Michael Waltrip put jet fuel in his
right
car for qualifying, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, but it's all been kind of like everybody got past those, right?
Okay. And it's not the Wild West anymore. And
it is with software,
especially in a spec series where they got much improved methods to make sure everything's on a level playing field. But what I was trying to say is, I think this could have bigger ramifications than just these guys losing some points. And if I'm Penske, I'm putting those two drivers out there and saying, you go out there and face the music and don't lie. You know what I mean? It's like, if he's really as embarrassed and upset as they make him out to be, start off with those two guys and go tell people what the hell you did. And then I think he's got to look inside and say, again, if I'm this embarrassed and this upset, who's embarrassing me? I mean, do you think this would affect his desire to rehire, you know, renew a New Garden's contract?
No.
No. Okay.
I'm not. I'll just say it right now. I'm not buying right now that Roger Penske was unawares.
Okay.
He might have been blissfully unaware. Okay. We'll see where this goes. It might go nowhere. It might just get very. I mean, it's crazy, right? It's the owner. The series owned by Penske, who's fining his own team, so I guess the money goes right back to him.
Left pocket, right pocket. Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to really punch these guys and fine them $20 million. And then the other company gets $20 million richer. So maybe that's a way to handle it.
a backdoor way to fund those marketing efforts.
Yeah, really punish those guys. Yeah. You know, maybe that's the way you should do, but it is somewhat remarkable, and you got to give Penske some credit, because I'm not so sure this would have happened during the Tony George days, that this would have come to the light of day. So at least they did that.
Well, once the series figured something out on Sunday morning before Long Beach, to risk not coming out like this and punishing themselves significantly would risk. If he's embarrassed now, he just would have been roasted. There's no way it wouldn't have come out once it had been found. If it didn't come out through proper channels, then somebody in the IndyCar office would have gotten on the phone to them, and then them would have, you know, gotten it going or whatever. There's no way you can keep things quiet these days. And so the better reaction is to own it and take the medicine. And look like a stand-up guy, even if you're not.
Yeah, I agree. That was probably the calculation that was done. But I think even if we have to give a little credit here that they did do it, right?
Sure. I mean, I hopefully they did it for the right reasons, not the reasons that I just went through. But but it's possible it could have been a combination of both. Who knows?
Well, we don't know. There's and even some of the parties that probably would take some glee in it, you have to be careful here because you're part of the series, right? And you got a lot of money and sponsors and everything else, you know, tied. So if you're Chip Ganassi, for example, you don't really want to see Roger Penske go down a ball of flames because that's just going to end up costing you a bunch of money too.
Right. Definitely.
So I think there's a lot of motivated parties to kind of just push this out of the way as soon as possible.
Well, unfortunately for IndyCar, they don't have 5 weeks till their next race. They are coming back up this weekend, and there's going to be a lot of press there, and they're going to ask the questions, and they better be ready for it.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be nonstop.
If they screw it up, the story will continue. If they handle it well, it may die down.
I mean, for the moment, it makes Newgarden and McLaughlin the new Alex Palou of this year. Having to answer a bunch of questions they don't want to answer.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Curb, let's look ahead at Barber, shall we?
Okay, let's.
All right, Curb, I think the best way to go over this, is as we always do, is pick our top six. And I believe you went first last time, if I recall.
Seems right.
Which puts the onus on me. You know, one thing I guess we didn't even talk about was Scott Dixon's win, Curb. Do we need to talk about that?
How much you hate to never hear the name Scott Dixon again, or would like to never hear the name Scott Dixon again?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to me that Power says, you know, give me the right tires that I didn't use up in qualifying, and, you know, I've been right there with him. If that's the truth, he didn't get any credit for saving fuel like Scott Dixon saves fuel, right?
Right.
But he did, right? He just did it slower.
He still finished, what, seventh or eighth or something?
No. So, you know, and he made the point. Look, I didn't have the extra set of greens that Scott had, and I love the greens, and the other ones were terrible. So maybe there's some truth. I mean, Will Power's not – I think he's usually the first to say, hey, if I had something for him, you know, if I didn't have anything for him, he'd say it, right? And right. So I think we kind of take him at face value there. So, but yeah, I mean, Dixon has won a lot of races that way, and, you know, he did it again, and he's won again at an advanced age in his career and so forth. So I think we would be remiss to say, you know, congratulations, Scott Dixon, on an amazing win in Long Beach.
Yeah. You know, I think it appears to me that Newgarden used up his used greens, I guess, used alternates, getting to Dixon. And once he was able to get to Dixon, I don't think he had enough tire left to pass him. And again, credit to Dixon for running his tires that long. Maybe conserving fuel saved the tires a little bit. You know, Newgarden just couldn't seem to get off of that hairpin close enough to Dixon to make a difference at the other end of the straight. Dixon seemed to be judiciously using his push to pass for 2 or 3 seconds, probably coming off of that hairpin to save as much fuel as they made it out that he was saving, like an impossible fuel save, and they actually used his push to pass. Judicious though it may have been, just even adds to the wonder of what he was able to accomplish.
Yeah, look, lots going on there, and he managed it all. So full credit.
Yep.
Curb, for my first pick, I'm going to take Alex Palou, like the cut of his jib in Alabama.
A wise choice, going back to the site of his first win in IndyCar. Smooth, flowing road course right up his alley. Yeah.
Keep in mind, he can't cheat now.
They'll be watching him, won't they? I guess I have to pick Scott Dixon. So.
Oh my God! You know what? That's so funny. I was gonna do the same thing. I thought I was gonna nab him from you. Incredible! It's a wise choice, I think. Honestly, I do think that's a good choice. I'm gonna have to. I'm gonna take Pato O'Ward.
Another good choice. He's got one win already this year, and probably feeling a lot of momentum today.
And pretty good on, again, pretty good on that track, pretty quick. He has been burning his tires through a bit quickly on that track, but in general, very fast, very speedy there.
Yeah, started third, finished fourth last year. I'm gonna go with my heart and go with willpower again.
Good for you.
Good for you, probably.
Well, I mean, you know, third last year, not a bad result, and. Again, very good on this track. You know, not a third the year before, actually, as well.
Well, a little more substance into my pick.
Yeah. So I don't think that's a bad choice.
Thank you for reassuring me.
I'm just going to stick on principle here and go cheater free and say Colton Herta.
All right.
Although, if I wasn't being cheater free, I'd probably choose Joseph Newgarden.
I haven't seen him have that much success at this track. Do you recall? I mean, last year he was started seventh.
He had an incident at the very beginning.
Okay. So it's unusual this early in the picks to go outside of the top two or three teams, but I'm feeling Christian Lundgaard on this natural road course.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. That's a bit of a stretch too. I think we're both just too shattered from today's news to pick either McLaughlin or Newgarden, but
Lundgaard did start third last year, finished sixth. So
yeah, no.
later in the season, as that team got together, they were strong on the road courses. And, so I'm going to break from the routine and, sign up with Mr. Lundgaard this week.
Anybody else, Curb, that you would feel at this point, has a pretty good run there. I mean, Froh's been qualifying well, still doesn't have his racecraft together. This seems like a track for Rossi too. Like this could be a good Rossi track, I would think.
Rossi's a possibility. I think that Grosjean was on the pole last year. You got to give him credit, and he's been off to a decent start this year, particularly in qualifying. So maybe he can reproduce that again at Barber. Don't know that again. His racecraft with his team doesn't seem to be quite up to par, but I would think he'd have a chance to qualify in the fast six given his history there.
Two Marcuses.
There's always Marcus Ericsson, the overlooked and forgotten that we need to remember. Armstrong should, with his background, road course should be comfortable for him. And again, with Chip Ganassi equipment, you'd like to think that the Linus Lundqvist and Tom Blomqvist of the world might find this road course more comfortable for them, maybe take a step forward. In their seasons, and of course,
Linus
has been a bit can't forget Theo Pourchaire.
yeah, you can. Linus this year performance a bit lacking, I would say, wouldn't you?
Disappointing, yes. He's been my dark horse pick in these races so far, and has not been up to my expectations anyway.
No. In fact, he's 17th in the rankings, two behind none other than Kiffin Simpson.
I mean, you think back to last year, jumping in a Meyer Shank racing car that had done nothing all season, and the performances he generated at Nashville and Portland and Laguna Seca, I guess. And then to jump into, Ganassi equipment this year and not seem to be able to match that kind of performance is just perplexing.
So, well, we've said it 100 times, Curb, like, you don't want to base too much off of one or two performances. No.
Hopefully,
fool's errand.
I don't think Indy.
Both ways. I mean, like expecting too much from going in, and then once you start.
Yeah, but on the one hand, he should have had plenty of experience in the ladder series at St. Pete. On the other hand, the ladder series doesn't go to Long Beach, so that you could excuse that as being a new track to him. But
Curb. I just want to end with what a unique experience it is to, I had a chance at your wedding to actually meet some of our listeners face to face, and was stunned how when they found out who I was, how they actually kind of recoiled a bit and took a few steps backwards.
poor Mr. Trippy, Sam Trippy.
Hey, I'll be over here then.
Well, his date to the wedding, let's say, was worth going off to a dark corner with. So can't fault him for that.
The lovely Rose, who I bet.
I didn't catch her name. So you're they couldn't have recoiled too far from you then if he caught.
That's Trippies. Before he knew who I was.
Oh, okay.
I was fine up until that point.
Yeah, well, it was nice of you to come. It was appreciated by all. Everybody's happy to see you, and I know you had to come from a great distance, and so that was greatly appreciated.
I wouldn't have missed it for the world. So. Thank you. All right, Curb, on that happy note, I'm going to have to say goodbye.
X handle.
At Hero IndyCar, at HIRO IndyCar.
And do we have a sponsor?
Hash Hive, coming some point.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that, and I hope everybody enjoys the IndyCar trip to the Augusta of IndyCar Racing, Barber Motorsports Park.
You will not be enjoying that trip, I take it, Kerb.
Not this year, no. But it was worth it the year I did, and I hope to go back soon.
I hope to go someday. I've been to the track. I just have never been to the race. But I do hope to go there someday, perhaps in a radical.
There you go. That'd be I would drive down to see that.
Which has a record field of radicals this particular go-around.
I saw that. Yeah. All right. Enjoy the race, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
Goodbye.